Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets, like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick. Tonight, we extend our expectation series. We're talking about two players who might play a prominent role on the Ravens, Roquan Smith and Dayton Wade, a top of the practice squad guy who seems to have a lot of trouble getting his first chance to play in the NFL. Joining me to talk about those guys is Childs Walker. Childs, how you doing?
I'm doing well, Ken. Thanks for having me back. It's always good to be here, both during the season and in the offseason. So ready to talk about these guys.
Yeah, great talking football. Really appreciate you making the time for us, Childs. And let's start with the undercard on this. And I Dayton Wade, a guy who has UDFA in 2024, played at Ole Miss for 2 years, a smaller guy at 5'9", 175. I think he's been kind of a camp darling, but maybe that's me projecting Dayton Wade on other people. And other people thought he was a better player. I thought his preseason play last year in particular was terrific. And I think what we've seen in OTA so far this year has been really pretty damn good too.
No, I don't think you're projecting. I think that's correct. I mean, he did generate some excitement, certainly in the preseason last year. And I think not just in the preseason. I mean, he to me is a guy who has always, he's always flashed enough in practice that you don't ignore him. You don't just sort of write him off and say, well, he's never going to do anything. I guess he doesn't have ideal size to be an outside downfield receiver in the NFL, but he does seem to consistently get open downfield and make play. Mm-hmm. Well, consistently, that might be overstating, but he does it enough that he catches people's eyes. And I mean, you know, he does have a fan base out there in the hardcore Ravens online world.
there you go. Yeah, I think he tracks the ball well. I think he's got some skills that are really nice. In fact, this is a really disappointing kind of a position for Wade to be in, but I think in a lot of ways, he's like a version of LaJonte Wester, a guy who basically is a smaller player, a lot of ability to go find the football, who seems to find it better than a lot of defensive backs when it's in the air and not quite on target. We saw LaJonte Wester had that great catch in the opener, forgetting who they beat in that opener for Colorado did, where he tracked back to a poorly thrown ball for Shadur and caught it. We've seen Wade do that a couple of times. He had two really spectacular catches a couple of days ago in practice. One of them was like Dave Casper going over, not figuring out what shoulder he's going to go over, and then kind of slips to the ground and catches it. I there's a lot of flash moments, and you look at him, he's got the gadget capability that you seem to like to bring into an offense that really utilizes misdirection as much as the Ravens do.
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it. I mean, the problem is that if he were to establish some sort of role with the Ravens, it would probably have to involve significant work as a returner, right? I mean, he would have to be a special teams contributor. And they seem to keep going for other guys to put above him in the pecking order there, right? I mean, whatever they've seen from him as a returner, they don't seem to want him to be a top option there. And I mean, you said LaJonte Wester. I mean, they obviously drafted him hoping that he's going to be the punt returner. I mean, at least that's how it feels. And they rolled multiple guys through that spot last year. So that certainly tells you that they don't feel like he's the guy who's going to seize that role. And without him seizing that role, it's hard to see a lot of avenues for him to get on the field.
Yeah, well, I completely agree. And it is, it's very disappointing because, you know, neither you nor I don't have regular season credentials, but you do, and you only get to be there for 30 minutes at the beginning of practice. And it's something where, you know, you're not seeing everything the coaches are in terms of why Dayton Wade is not a guy you'd want to go to ahead of Sims or Miller or Kirkwood or who's the other guy? Deontay Johnson. I mean, you know, all these guys they bring in. So it's frustrating. By the way, the 30 minutes of the start of practice, does that ever, I mean, oftentimes special teams is included during that portion during camp. Is the order of things the same, or is it a lot of individual drills that they do during that time?
Usually we get a good glimpse of special teams on Friday. At the beginning of the Friday practice, that's usually most of what we will see on a Friday. A lot of the starters will roll out a little bit later, and so you'll see a lot of special teams work that day, and you see a little bit on the other days. But yes, we do see a good bit of special teams. Certainly, you know, I mean, we don't see any of the real team offensive defense stuff, but we do see the special team stuff, and that's actually good because, I mean, it does. I mean, if you pay attention to who's starting in various special team spots, that can give you a nice sort of sneak preview of who's likely to be active on Sunday. So that is one thing that we're able to pick up, you know, being at practice every day.
Oh, that's interesting. I really hadn't thought of that. Let's see, Deontay Hardy, another name who was ahead of him, hurt the whole year, and he still doesn't get a chance. All right. What else to say about him? He does have a fairly modest return history as a kickoff return man, and that is something where I'm not sure that Harbaugh has bought into that part of his game either, if he even really sees it as an option. One of the things Harb said at the podium recently was that running backs seem to have adapted very well to the new kickoff return rules. And Keaton Mitchell also said the same thing. It's like, I'm a running back. It's like a zone run play. And
yeah, I mean, the vibes you get both from Keaton Mitchell and from the coaching staff, I think, are that they're very excited about the idea of him maybe becoming a dynamic force in that role. So no, I mean, there's no sense that Dayton Wade is going to suddenly leap there. I mean, I would think punt returning would be a better chance, and I'm not sure that's a good chance either.
Yeah. And you do have two deep on kickoff return. So it's a half field kind of role. So if they, and it might even be required to be that, but I'm not sure if you're allowed to play two up and one back or it's one up and two back, but whatever the case is in terms of the things they've been splitting the field to make sure they get to the ball quickly. And the bounce into the end zone touchback is the one that really kills the receiving team. That's the one that puts them at the 20 yard lines. That's the one they really don't want. But this new year, it's going to be interesting seeing how many kicks are returned and how effective they are doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, you know, Dayton Wade, I mean, it's just, where does he find his opportunity? I mean, certainly not as a pass catcher, right? I mean, that's just, I mean, they have many, many mouths to feed ahead of him there, right? I mean, things would have to go very badly for him to become a significant part of the mix there. So, I mean, it's just hard to see. I mean, no matter what he does in practice, really.
I think he's almost a player that one guy really needs to get hurt to give him an opportunity. I think if Wester was hurt, I think there is a chance that he would be the guy that replaced him, because you have to have a backup punt returner. Once you do that, then I think they find ways to fit him into the offense, doing some of the things that Wester had already been doing. So, let's move on. Talk about what does a good season look like to you for Dayton Wade?
Yeah, I think a good season is he stays healthy. He gets himself back on the practice squad, you know, maybe in a more elevated position in the practice squad pecking order, so that, you know, if they do need to call up a receiver or returner, he is either, you know, I mean, the first guy they think of, or one of the first couple of guys they think of, which he wasn't last year. And, you know, maybe if there's a small injury, or, you know, if they're lucky enough to not have to play their regulars at the end of the season, he gets a call up or two. I think that's a that's a successful season for him.
Yeah. Okay. I'm right there with you. Almost word for word. Healthy through camp to maximize live fire play. That's the one thing I'll add to that is that the soft tissue injuries that get to cornerbacks and wide receivers during camp, they're most serious for those two positions because they oftentimes those guys have long totem poles of players in backup roles that have to prove something. And, you know, you're a JAD or a Iman Marshall, you know, God help you. And you lose multiple years to this sort of thing. It just, it's awful. And it seems like it happens more to those positions in terms of them exerting themselves on the field. But I'm with you. Shows enough kickoff and punt return that he's the top of the practice squad option there, elevated for two games, does enough on special teams and as a receiver to remain a 2026 camp and practice squad option. And honestly, at the 60th percentile, I that's even kind of a stretch in terms of how I'm thinking about it.
Yeah. No, I agree. And then I know, I mean, we get into sort of the best case scenario for him, and probably the best case scenario for him is a not good scenario for the Ravens, right? I mean, if he's getting a bigger role, that probably means somebody else has either failed or gotten hurt. And you know, I guess in that case, it would be what we just talked about. Plus, I mean, you know, he's in a significant number of games. You know, he plays a real role as a returner, and he's, you know, an actual contributor to the roster. But, you know, we're probably talking about multiple players being hurt at that point, which is not what you want to see in the big picture.
Yeah, I'm with you entirely. I think that the big thing is that Wester would have to get hurt. If Wester got hurt, then I think they'd be happy they had Dayton Wade. Wade would move into that return role. I don't see them giving it to Tylan Wallace again, although maybe Wallace will be returning kicks all camp and will show a spark that's new and be better at getting under the ball. They had so many problems getting under the ball last year that they seem to eliminate a lot of guys without really finding an answer in terms of the punt returns. And then the ability to use and create misdirection without having to use Flowers for that, I think, is really important for the offense. So it'd be nice if they could get him in because he's on the team for return purposes and he's active for exactly that. Then he becomes one of your bodies that you can fit in as fresh legs into your offense and occasionally get the football on a misdirection play. And if they can find a 15-yard play for Sims at a key moment against the Steelers, then they can find a play for Dayton Wade.
But again, you said it. I mean, everything you're saying about him, they would really rather have LaJonte Wester be in those spots, right? And that's the bottom line.
Yeah, that is the bottom line. And, you know, the drafting LaJonte Wester, even though nominally the two guys are in the same position with 4 years of runway in terms of their career, you know, I don't think that's the way they view it at all. I think they view Wester as a pretty significant potentially good outcome relative to what they think they can get out of Wade.
Yeah.
All right, let's move over, talk a little Roquan Smith. He's entering his fourth season with the Ravens already. It just seems like yesterday they traded for him. And boy, does the price not look too expensive at this point.
Yeah, I mean, you give up a few relatively inconsequential draft picks. I mean, certainly they turned out to be relatively inconsequential. And you get a guy who was one of the foundational players on two of the best teams in the history of the franchise, right? I mean, that's you do that every time.
Yeah, he's been all pro one all three seasons. He's been with the Ravens. He just ended up being a much better player than he'd been with the Bears in his time with the Ravens. He is. I talked at times about some of the evaluator arrogance that I think has gone on with figuring, and maybe it's a coaching arrogance, but I don't want to like blame it on anyone in particular. I think the organization is guilty of it to a certain degree, that they think they can take a player who has a fairly significant role with another team, put him in a smaller role within the Ravens structure, and it will always work out. And I think, you know, the key, prime example of that not working out is Eddie Jackson last year.
Yeah.
But Roquan Smith, if anything, he's got a bigger role with the Ravens than he had with the Bears. You know, he's actually asked to do some things that I think are not the things he's best at, because the player next to him has had significant limitations. So Patrick Queen, if he can rush the passer, you have him rush the passer, but Roquan, you need in coverage, even though that might not be his best thing.
Yeah. I mean, Roquan is still an interesting player to evaluate in the sense that the way that he's perceived. I mean, the all pros and the, you know, sort of the superficial production numbers, the tackle numbers and stuff, don't always line up with, you know, the PFF grades that people like to look at, for example. So like that was certainly the case last season, right? I mean, you know, in a lot of ways, he was the same player last year, really, as he had been the season before, but his grade was much lower. That was mostly coverage. And I mean, I know you have spent a lot of time sort of looking at what goes into the PFF grades and why they are the way they are. But to me, he's an interesting player in that respect, because I think that there's a section of the fan base that was at least a little bit disappointed with his performance last year. You know, you would see grumbling about, is he in tip-top shape? I'm not suggesting that he wasn't. I always find it very difficult to say that and very reluctant to say that about a player. I mean, he posts for every practice all summer long. He's there for every game. He always plays at a high level. I mean, I wouldn't make that claim, but I mean, that is something out there that people are talking about. So he is sort of an interesting player to consider kind of the big picture of him at this point. So, I mean, I'm interested in kind of your thoughts on, you know, what you see in terms of looking at him game to game versus some of those things that people will throw out about him, you know, on occasion.
Right. I'll give you three things right off the bat. His missed tackle rate is ridiculously good. He's one of the best tacklers that's played the position probably in the history of the game. He's playing at the same time as Bobby Wagner, who's also outstanding, but he's a guy who has never had in his entire career a 9% missed tackle rate in any season, when the average at inside linebacker, I think, is around 13. So I'd have to look at the median, I actually mean by that. That's impressive. To start with, he was actually used more than I thought as a pass rusher last year. He had 88 pass rushes on the season. It seemed to me, and it was also more pass snaps against the Ravens, but it did seem to me like he was also asked to be in some coverage assignments where they couldn't necessarily trust Simpson. That's number one. But number two is that the safety help behind him is terrible. And that makes particularly on PFF, that makes an inside linebacker look really bad, because most of the targets between level 2 and 3 go to the underneath defender. Right. And sometimes even if it's closer to the safety, and it's very hard for a inside linebacker to do anything but drag that route and try and make it look like a hard throw for the quarterback. But if the safety behind him is nowhere near in position, you know, it still looks like easy money to them. It looks like low hanging fruit. So it's really hard for an inside linebacker to look good if the safety behind him is not good.
Yeah. And I do think he got blamed and downgraded for their broader defensive struggles through, yeah, whatever it was, the first half or first two thirds of last season. And I guess it's fair to at least ask the question, if the defense is struggling overall, you know, how much of the blame for that do you apportion to their best couple of players, you know, especially a guy who's considered to be sort of the fulcrum of the defense beyond just what he does individually as a player. I mean, he's one of the chief communicators. He's one of the chief role models. He's the guy that everybody looks to. So, I mean, if the whole thing isn't working, certainly some fans will blame him. And then we can talk about, you know, how fair is that, or how fair is that not? And I mean, I certainly think that was, you know, he was thrown into that discussion last year, you know, whether you think that the tape supports that notion or not.
Well, let me ask you a question from your experience with Roquan, because you've spent a lot more time with him just either at the podium or in person interviewing him. The question I would have is this: is he a great leader by example primarily, or is he a particularly vocal leader specifically? And I in the case of the vocal leadership, I I'm really asking, not is he a Preacher Ray type leader where he gets people fired up before the game? Because I'd hope he could do that. I'd hope that would be part of his personality. But if it wasn't, and somebody else is good, I'd hope he could seed it. But what I want to know is, intellectually, if you're breaking down tape with Roquan Smith, and it, you know, he may not be in the same room as Eddie Jackson or Marcus Williams in terms of doing that. But I wonder if do you get the sense that he'd be someone who would go to those two guys and tell them, hey, look, guys, we're breaking down on the back end, play after play after play. We got to watch some film together, or we, you know, whatever.
Yeah, I do. I mean, I think that was one of the things that was so obviously special about him so quickly after the trade. I mean, that happened almost immediately, that, you know, mm-hmm. every defensive player in that locker room was almost immediately looking to him and seeing him as a connector of the larger group. I mean, I think, I don't remember when it was, but I mean, I think within a year of him being here, maybe less. I mean, I think Marlon Humphrey said that, you know, he was a sort of a next level figure in terms of galvanizing the entire defense and, you know, really pulling everybody together and, you know, being the one that everybody looked to. So, I mean, I do think that's a real thing. Yes. I mean, in terms of the film study, I mean, I don't hear that about him as, I mean, you don't hear that about him like you used to hear it with Ed Reed, for example, who was considered mm-hmm. to be sort of a, you know, had sort of a freakish ability there and also a great ability to sort of pull younger players into his sway and sort of teach them how to do it. That's not to say that Roquan doesn't do that and that you don't hear good things about him in terms of someone who sees the game and understands the game. I'm just saying you don't necessarily hear about it on the Ed Reed sort of all-time level. But in terms of his ability to sort of work the room and connect with every player on the defense. And I mean, I think one thing that struck me right away about him is he's just he's sort of a naturally curious guy. I mean, like if you interview him, he'll interview you back. I mean, he'll want to sort of strike up a conversation with you. And I think he does that with his teammates. And I think he built relationships very quickly for that reason. And that's maybe a little bit of a different kind of leadership, but I mean, I do think it's real. And I mean, you know, when you hear the rookies talk already about who they're looking to as sort of a model of how to be a Ravens defender, he's, I think, probably the first name they say more than anybody else. So, I mean, you know, I do think all that stuff adds up to him being a very impressive all around, you know, building block of the team.
Okay. It's interesting. Exactly what you talked about in terms of the guy interviews you back is something I associate with Kyle Van Noy. And you know, Kyle Van Noy has that stand-up comedian thing he does during the offseason, or he's involved with it. Let's just put it that way. But it's always like, if you've ever been to maybe it's open mic night, but I associate more with like comedians who have a regular gig and they don't really have enough material to use it over and over and over again. And so they're playing off what's happening in the crowd and they're making observations and picking up. Yeah. I'm sorry, what'd you say?
I said, yeah, crowd work.
Yeah, crowd work. Yeah. And Van Noy, does he do that when he's put up there in front of a microphone, not uncomfortable with it at all. But the flip side of that is I don't think Van Noy is a super vocal.
You ever have one of those days where everything's off? Well, Mood can help with that. And let me tell you about Mood. It's the online cannabis brand that is changing the way we handle everything from stress to sleepless nights with functional gummies that are 100% federally legal cannabis. Mood launched to make cannabis affordable, accessible, and transparent, while at the same time supporting American farmers growing premium hemp on small pesticide-free farms. Their gummies are next level. Seriously, I've tried a few and each one feels totally different. The Sleepy Time gummies, out like a light, immediately asleep. The Epic Euphoria, it's perfect when you just need a reset to feel good again. What makes them unique? Mood combines THC with herbs and adaptogens, so you get real targeted effects. You're not going to find this in your typical dispensary. And here's the best part. Mood ships discreetly to most states, offers a 100-day satisfaction guarantee, and right now you get 20% off your first order with the promo code RAVEN. Just head to mood.com. Find your perfect gummy and use the code RAVENS at checkout to save 20%.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same Game Parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Leader. I don't think he you know, he'll get in the face of another player and tell me, you know, you got to do this right. I think you know, he's a good leader by example. I just don't think he's that vocal leader.
No, I think that's true. But I guess to get back, to the main point, I mean, I do think, I mean, Roquan is in multiple ways for sure.
Yeah. All right. All right, great. What else say about Roquan and his stuff? Stops to miss tackles is another thing. It's like the strikeout to walk ratio for inside linebackers. Right. So his stops were 57 and 12 missed tackles this last year. It's actually a slight drop off from his career rate of 4.9 to 1 at 4.8 to 1, but it's still very, very, very good. There's very few inside linebackers in the entire league that are at that level. Most are, you know, 4 to 1, a little bit less. If you're talking Patrick Queen, it's probably, you know, 2.3 to 1 or something, where he's got a big missed tackle problem, is not diving in holes to make tackles as much. But he's right at the top of the whole league there. And I think if there was something that helped him last year, maybe it was that the fact that the Ravens returned to more of a stop the run focus. I think they made a very measured 2023, they made a very measured decision to be a worse run defense team to try and help their pass defense. And I think it really worked. But this last year with Orr, they tried to, you know, go back to being a good run defense. And I think that might have magnified some of at least the tackling and the stops that Roe had.
Does it bother you at all that he doesn't make more plays behind the line of scrimmage, that he doesn't create more turnovers, you know, those sort of flashy plays that, you know, again, maybe the more casual person watching says they're paying their middle linebacker $20 million a year. That's a lot of money at that position. Why is he making game transforming plays? I don't necessarily look at that position that way or expect that of that position, but I'm curious how you look at that.
Yeah. So he's, I think you got to look at Roquan as he's the glue that holds the defense together in a lot of ways. He makes a lot of other players better. And he's the second level version of what Travis Jones is to the Ravens pass rush. Travis Jones to the Ravens pass rush, he's the heart and soul of it. I mean, and people who really watch and understand, see, there's double team after double team thrown at Travis Jones. And we just had Chuck Smith at the podium, and he said, you know, I put him up against 95% of the guards in the league and they won't be able to block him. Right. They have to double team him. That creates these beautiful one-on-one opportunities for three different guys. It's exactly what you want. And Roquan, he's because he does a lot of things well, including coverage. He's a guy who can take on that responsibility when nobody else is good at it at the second level. And he can be the lead guy as he was for Patrick Queen, in terms of, he makes it easy for Queen to read his movements, to read the flow of the play and understand where his gap responsibility is. I think that's something he's done very well. And you know, his stops are still very good. So plays behind the line of scrimmage, I'm not too concerned about tackles for loss specifically. The stops is defensive wins. So that's pretty important to me.
Yeah.
All right. So right now, I mean, I guess one of the big questions for the Ravens is, who's the Mike backup right now? If anything happened to Roquan, is it Buchanan? Is it maybe Simpson? Is it a little bit bigger this year?
I mean, I guess it would be Simpson, but I mean, it's a real question, right? I mean, you're not gonna put the rookie in that spot, right? Like that doesn't make sense, I don't think. I don't know. I mean, they're pretty thin at that position. And I mean, that's where, you know, people that aren't necessarily thought of as significant losses, like a Chris Board and a Malik Harrison. I mean, those are certainly felt in a depth way, right? I mean, they were very reliant on those guys down the stretch last year when they lost some confidence in Simpson. Mm-hmm. So I guess I still wouldn't be surprised if they brought in another veteran in that mix somewhere along the way. but it's not a deep group.
No, it's not. And they rely very heavily on that group for special teams. So there's probably some additional injury risk you bear at those positions. But yep. Malik Harris and Chris Boyd were like 800 special team snaps between the two of them last year. Yeah. And they're still playing a lot of defense as well. So I do think the Steelers overpaid. I'm always happy when that happens for Malik Harris. But I was also, you know, a twinge of regret that Chris Boyd was lost. I thought that he was a player that they probably would have been well served to try and keep a Raven. It obviously didn't work out.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by that, actually.
Yeah. You know, one of the things with Roquan is even in these OTAs, he seems to be there every day. He might have missed one. I'm trying to remember if he missed a practice during this whole set. But, I mean, he seems to really want to be here.
Yeah, he hasn't. I mean, I haven't been to all of them. He hasn't missed any of the ones that I've been at. I think you've been to probably a few more than me. But I don't I mean, that is a defining trait of him. I mean, he doesn't he seems to love football. He seems to want to be there every time he can be there. And that's been the case since he got here. And that's, you know, during the season, it is extremely rare to see him miss a practice, even when he's hurt. I mean, he was very banged up at the end of the 23 season, and still very rarely would you see him not taking full reps in a practice. I mean, the work ethic in terms of being there for football stuff is impeccable, I think.
Yeah. I was interested to hear John Harbaugh really went out of his way today to talk about how Tavius Robinson had, this is actually yesterday. We're talking on Thursday. So it was at Wednesday's OTA. So he was talking about Tavius Robinson. And he said, it was one of these things where Harbaugh is being intentionally poetic about the player, which is it's a thing he falls into once in a while. Chuck Clark, remember, he's brilliant, bold, and brief or something he said. But he said Tavius Robinson never missed a practice, never missed a meeting, never missed a weight session or something. That wasn't it, but it was something else. And then never missed a meal at the end of that. And he's only saying that so you remember the other things. It's really obvious what he's trying to do there. But but Tavius is I love that when a player says, I've never missed a practice. Damn it, it's not going to happen for the first time today. You know, that is a great thing to have going on your team. And it's a great example to be given, even though there's a lot of veterans who are in and out of these OTAs on a, you know, every other day kind of basis.
Right. And no one would blame Roquan Smith if he took a week of OTAs off or if he was missing one practice a week. I mean, it's a standard that he holds himself to. And I mean, it's like, you know, I guess some people could say it's hokey that he runs onto the practice field, you know, before, you know, at the beginning of every practice during the season. But I mean, that's a way of him sort of reaffirming that love and that commitment, right? I mean, that's sort of his outward way to symbolize that. And I mean, it's obvious that it does mean a great deal to him. And that's part of why he's become the figure that he has in just 2.5 years.
Yeah. That's something that every player has their own way of showing it. But I really love the way that Suggs would drive onto the field. Well, okay, that wasn't that important to me. He's still, was it? I guess it was Bisciotti's cart at the time that he would jump into.
He and Brandon Williams would crash it into water jugs or tackling dummies. Yeah, that was that was more of a comedy. That was more of a comedy routine.
you'll back me up on this, but Suggs clearly loved practice, really, really loved the competitive practices where they were scoring it. And what's more than that is you always knew there's three practice fields there. You could be anywhere within that three field area. You always knew where Terrell Suggs was because his voice is the loudest and it carries all over the place there. And he would have at least one really good one-liner just that he throws out there that you're picking up your pad and you're writing down, you know, what he say here. He obviously loved practice right till the end of the Ravens days that he had.
Well, and he loved to talk smack with the quarterbacks during practice. Yeah. I mean, he tortured poor Matt Schaub. I remember Matt Schaub was consistently throwing interceptions and pick sixes in practice, and Suggs wouldn't let him hear the end of it. So Roquan hasn't taken on that mantle, but he's a daily presence in his own way.
One last thing we'll talk about before we get to a good and a great season is this. Roquan is actually coming up to a fairly pivotal year in his contract.
Yes.
Because next year there is a significant savings in cap for cutting him. And I think it's about $11 million and then maybe $20 million is my recollection, but I need to look this up to make sure I'm right. Do you think that he's at any danger after 25?
I agree with you that it's a pivot point. It's a time when, is he in danger? I mean, that gets back to what we were talking about earlier. I mean, they don't really have a pipeline at that position. You know, maybe those two younger players develop this year and we have a different feeling about that in 6 months. But right now, they don't have anybody who would be in a position to step in and do half of what Roquan does. So, I mean, the idea of him being gone next year right now seems inconceivable because, you know, this team is still going to be trying to win a Super Bowl next year, is still going to have a decked out roster next year, and you don't want a hole in the middle of the defense. So in that sense, it's hard to imagine. On the other hand, it is absolutely a pivot point economically where you would think you're either talking extension or you're starting to think about what comes after him, even if that's not in 26. I mean, certainly in 27, you know, it starts to become a bigger factor. I mean, he's a little bit older, although, I mean, we've seen the best players at that position certainly retain their effectiveness into their 30s. I mean, we saw it with Ray here. I mean, you know, we're seeing it with various guys around the league now. So it's not like, I mean, Roquan could be a very effective player for 5 or 6 more years. I mean, I don't think that's, you know, straining credulity at all. But they're paying him a lot of money for that position. And so, I mean, I would still be surprised if he's not the guy in 26, but I think you're absolutely right to say that it's a conversation that we're going to be having, you know, after this season, and he's going to be one of the guys we're talking about. There's so many guys we might be talking about from an extension standpoint, and I do think he'll be one of them, because you're going to want to reduce that number if you think he's going to be your guy for 3 or 4 more years. So, I mean, he's going to be, you know, he's been a guy we haven't had to think about that way for the last couple of years, but he is going to be a guy that we're going to have to think about that way by the end of this year.
Right. I have this in my notes here. He's 28 in April. I hope I updated that, and he's not 29 in April right now. But I you know, that's actually.
I mean, he was young. He was young when he was drafted.
Yeah, he's still 28 years, 65 days right now.
Yep.
All right. What does a good season look like to you for Roquan Smith?
I think a good season is a season very much like last year and the year before, right? I mean, that's he plays every game. He plays 16, 17 games. You know, again, he's able to be there for every practice like we've seen him do. He remains productive in the way that we've seen. He remains a sure tackler. I mean, he's sort of the fulcrum of the defense. You know, you hope that the big picture of their coverage is more sound from day one this year. I think they're expecting that. I think we're probably expecting that. So maybe he gets blamed for less of what happens behind him. But that's not. I think it's basically maintaining the same level of play is a good season.
Yeah, I think that would be good. I'm starting to get to the point at age 28 where I might say a small amount of regression is okay, even in a good season. Any 30, 31-year-old player, I'd be definitely saying, boy, just moderate regression is okay. Just don't make it be too much. In his case, I'd say plays 15-plus games at approximately the same level as 24, remains one of the best inside linebackers in the game due to a broad set of positives, awareness, and on-field leadership. Expect him to continue in the Pro Bowl / All-Pro discussion without the need to post a gaudy sack or interception total if he does not fall way off as a tackler. I think that's always kind of been his hallmark and what's kind of got him any kind of postseason honors. And, you know, if he's doing that well and continuing with the stops at a high level, I think he's at a minimum at a good season, even if some other things fall off.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that, again, because of what they're paying him, I think if he regresses a little bit, that he's going to start to come in for some more significant criticism, whether that's fair or not. Mm-hmm. I think that there will be a lot of people in the fan base who don't think it's a good season if he would even take a, say, a 10% step back from what he did last year. So, yeah, I mean, I think he's sort of earned being graded on, you know, by a tough standard.
Yeah, that's a good point. You make a lot of money. You certainly earn that right. You're certainly playing on the biggest stage. I think he carries himself extremely well for that. And he's probably, you know, certainly at least since Georgia, he's always kind of worn that mantle all the way through of having to be graded pretty toughly and done it well.
Yep.
All right. What does a great season look like?
I mean, you know, again, because of who he is and the consistency that he's played with since he got here, I mean, I don't think the difference between a good season and a great season is as wide with him as it is probably for most players on the team. So I think a great season for him is what we just said, but a little bit more, right? I mean, he plays 17 games. He stays healthy. He's not playing through injuries at any point in the year. You know, the tackle rate stays the same. I mean, the soundness stays the same, but maybe he does make a few more big plays, not because he's necessarily doing anything different, but I mean, that's just the way it breaks. You know, maybe he makes a couple of interceptions instead of one. Maybe he makes a couple more plays behind the line of scrimmage, just because that's the way it plays out. I mean, but again, I don't think he needs to do that to be an excellent player. I just think that's the sort of stuff that can happen in a magical season. And, you know, you're first team all pro and you're a candidate for defensive player of the year. He has that capability. So, I mean, it's sort of his normal high level plus a little, you know, a little extra sprinkles on the Sunday is, I guess, what I would call a great season for him.
You know, I'm right there with you in terms of that. I don't think there's a lot of differentiation between like the 60th and 80th percentile, as I would call it. But here's the additional thing that I think would make a really great Roquan season is that he takes on whatever responsibilities are necessary to make the combination of Buchanan and Simpson effective at the will spot. Whoever wins the job, whoever ends up there, Dimeback ends up there at some point during the season and they're playing with that. Whatever the situation, that will linebacker spot is playing better because of Roquan and the responsibilities he's taking, the on-field leadership, any kind of pre or post snap kind of reads he's making to help out another player, I think is really big.
Which I think we would say happened with Queen, right? I mean, that was one of his calling cards from his first season and a half here was, you know, helping raise Queen.
It might be one of the reasons why you'd say last year wasn't good is that Simpson didn't come through, and had to be removed, and they had to try other things. And even that said, you know, Chris Board's on the field, and Chris Board was a player who was highly criticized at times before his first tour with the Ravens. Malik Harrison, I think, you know, did some things reasonably well for the Ravens in terms of what he did defensively, and in particular playing the edge really more than playing inside linebacker. But, you know, those are a couple guys who are pedestrian in terms of their ability. And if he's making him a better player by the things he's able to pick up, then that's a pretty significant contribution.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would say certainly based on the way the Ravens handled it last year, their feeling was that Simpson wasn't showing them what they needed to see from him. I mean, I didn't get the sense that they had any disappointment with Roquan's role in that whole situation. I mean, I think that, you know, they wanted to see things from Simpson that they weren't seeing.
Yeah. I mean, I agree. I think it was a processing issue there. I don't know what Roquan could have done to quote unquote fix that.
Yeah.
I will say Simpson is one of the players, and there's a number of Ravens who look like they've spent the whole offseason in the weight room, but Simpson looks huge this year to me, a lot bigger than he looked last year. I don't know if you've kind of noticed that same, like, bigger guns, bigger upper body, just looks like more an athlete, and maybe he's carrying a little more weight that'll make it a little harder for him to move. I don't know, but it looks big.
And I mean, I don't think his struggles last year were as a result of any lack of dedication or want to. I mean, I think he badly wants to be good. I mean, I think he's, you know, I think he's very well liked, you know, by his peers and by the coaches. I mean, so, you know, I think he's trying, but, you know, it's a results business. So we'll see. But I mean, he'll get his chance this year. I mean, it's hard to see a situation in which he's not playing a lot.
Well, Chiles, always great talking football with you. And I'm always interested to hear about your own career at the Sun and what you're working on now. I know that you were doing some political stuff for a while and you were doing some non-sports stuff. Do you have any non-sports responsibilities currently?
Well, so this is something I'm not sure I guess you didn't see this. I left the Sun. I am contributing to the Banner now.
Oh, no, I did not know that. I am sorry about that.
No, that's okay. That's okay. It's
Banner is getting everybody now, aren't they?
This is something that happened in the last, it happened right at the beginning of April. So yeah, I made that change. I left the Sun after 24 years. And to answer your broader question, it's still a little bit of a work in progress to know exactly what I'm going to be doing. I mean, it's going to be a lot of similar types of stories that I've done in the past. And I mean, the five things we learn posting the morning after every Ravens game, I mean, that will carry over. So, I mean, that's going to be sort of the one thing that I know I'm going to be doing, but yeah.
Really enjoy that format.
Big changes for me.
All right. Well, that's if it's a matter of congratulations, thank you very much. You know, it's congratulations.
Well, thank you.
I know it's not always by choice these things happen, and I don't want to overdo it too much. So much turmoil in the state of Maryland right now in terms of a whole bunch of government employees are out of work and whatnot. You never know how to react to somebody who has a job change. And, Jonas made the same move you did. I get the sense it was a great move for him, but I never know. I never know how to react.
No, it was by choice. So I am grateful for your congratulations.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks again, Chiles. Other folks out there, thanks for listening as always. And please hit me up with a DM if you have a topic you'd like on a film study short sometime in July. There'll be a nice open runway of time to do a show then. Chiles, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Ken. And I'll see you during the season.
I'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
Breaking news, and this one is almost unbelievable.
Yeah, it's all about new customers at Bet365 because they get $150 in bonus bets when they bet $5, win or lose. And even better, bonus bets can be used on the spread, totals, and player props.
There you have it. Bet $5 to get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. And see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. T&Cs apply. Available in app only.
You've done it again, finance teams. You closed the books, and it went fine. Sure, some expenses were missing receipts, but that's fine. Stayed late to process invoices by hand. It's all fine. But don't you deserve better than fine? With Ramp, expenses are submitted with a text, invoices are coded automatically, and everything is connected to your accounting system, so you can close the books without all the busy work. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.
Breaking news coming in from Bet365, and it's no surprise. Same game parlay from Bet365 just keeps getting better.
Well, it's even easier to make a bet. Choose from the most popular markets like hits, run line, totals, and home runs. So many to choose from.
Download the app, start building your bet, and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Americans love using their credit cards, the most secure and hassle-free way to pay. But D.C. politicians want to change that with the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill. This bill lets corporate megastores pick how your credit card is processed, allowing them to use untested payment networks that jeopardize your data security and rewards. Corporate megastores will make more money, and you pay the price. Tell Congress to guard your card, because Americans lose when politicians choose. Learn more at guardyourcard.com.